Every now and then I get a little bit lonely, and you're never coming round.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit tired of listening to the sound of my tears.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit nervous that the best of all the years have gone by.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit terrified. I see the fucking look in your eyes.
Turn around.
Another week of SVS Fly Fishing. And what is going on, boys?
I had the coffee shop feel there for a minute.
I'm over it.
Fun day. It's going to be a fun show.
I am pumped about today, man. We did a lot of driving, a lot of searching, but we made a payoff in the end.
Yeah, yeah, man. We started out real early in the morning, too. I'm over here yawning.
So my wife goes, "How's fishing today?" I said, "Well, we took crap and turned it, and I wouldn't quite say filet mignon, but it was a solid sirloin."
Took lemons and made lemonade? Yeah.
We found someone who brought vodka to the party and mixed our lemonade with it.
Yeah, usually, plan Bs don't work out or plan whatevers don't work out after you've run up and down a couple different places and, you know, as far up and down a place as you can, a river as you can, and... You know, you go to plan C, and it's like, man, plan C turned out.
I think everybody across
the... Plan C for catching.
Yeah.
Everybody across the states are dealing with all this stinking rain, and it's just, you can't get away from it. Everywhere we go, blown mud everywhere.
I kind of had a hunch, you know, we went past a couple local streams and what they look like, and we were traveling a little further away, and kind of knew what we were going to get ourselves into, but, you know, we were kind of searching out something new that we haven't been... You know, no water that we haven't been on yet. So, you know, wanted to find a good place to put in and take out. And, you know, different sections of the river that we can, you know, that's floatable.
And we found good put-ins and take-outs on that river. So, you know, in 3 years when it comes down, we'll be good. We'll be set.
It's got a nice scenic aspect to it, too. It's more than... I anticipated it was going to be for sure.
And our local, you know, it's not like that. You're not going to see the kitchen sink and everything else. It seems like there, so.
Yeah.
Which I don't mind seeing the kitchen sink and, you know, the shopping cart, but, you know, not all the time. Sometimes I want to see something nice, some pines and some pretty rocks and some deep pools and.
I took some beautiful pictures. I took some pictures of some hemlocks today. Speaking of the pines, and speaking of that, tonight's show brought to you by Predator Fly Gear. Check them out at predatorflygear.com.
A-Rex Hooks. Find them at A-Rex Hooks.com.
Sims Fishing. You can find them at SimsFishing.com.
Urban Fly Company. UrbanFlyCompany.com.
That's a hard fucking one. You'll fuck that up every time.
check out Allsdorf Genetics And if you need any of Joel's feathers, get a hold of Mark at urbanflycompany.com. The supply and demand is going to be a little washed out.
Yeah, there's going to be some coming through, but a lot are spoken for. So if you're listening, if there's something particular looking for, let me know, because a majority of what's coming here, it's being shipped tomorrow's already gone. Also, to check out the dock. Why Not Fishing. I could check out the app, the dock from Why Not Fishing.
Other than that, I think we're ready to go back to, you know,
trout fishing.
Oh, wait, before we get there, guest. We did have a guest tonight.
Chris Galvin from Galvin Guiding is coming on. He's going to talk about trout fishing, competitive trout angling, and a little thing we like to call carp fishing. Yeah, boys. Get cool. It up.
That'll be fun. All right, Jay.
Speaking of carp, we saw a couple of those as well today. Oh. Holy shit, and they were big. Big, big.
There's like, the mamas.
Stop your heart like, oh, God, please bite. I think we had one waking on a popper for a second.
Same place you guys are.
Yeah.
If you got one of them, though, there's about a less than 2% chance you'd land it. Just because, you know, as soon as you got him, the weeds are right to the surface. It's going to bury in them, and there's just going to be no unbuckling all them weeds. Especially we got 5 weights.
It's going to be a 20-pound carp with 40 pounds of shrubbery on it.
Yeah,
like you said, 5 weights.
Yeah. Well, we went out with the intention of doing a initial, 3-mile float?
Mm-hmm.
First run musky, kind of get a feel of the water, go back over it second time smallmouth. We got there, and that wasn't happening at all. So what plan B was?
It was scary high.
Oh yeah, it was like some of the areas there I'm good.
Big downpour last night, a few different places. Probably what it got.
I think my quote walking down was, I think if we floated this today, we'd probably die.
Yes.
That's a real river there, buddy.
Oh yeah, it was roaring.
It's one of those deals that we'd never been on the river before, and we've never been on it in fast water, so we don't know what's coming up and what we have to be ready for. So,
and getting into the feeder creeks to it are equally as scary as the water was.
Well, and usually if you talk to one of us, you know, between the four of us, you know, within that hour's drive, we pretty much hit. I mean, I've been around or seen some of the. Every one of us like,
I've never been there.
You ever been there? No, man, I've never been there. You ever been there? No, man, I've never been there either. No, me neither, man.
I've talked to a few people who fished it, but that's mainly stock trout fishing, you know, wherever the truck goes. So, but it's real scenic, like you're saying. It's a different look than most of our rivers close to home, or streams actually, because this is like a stream with a lot of water. It's rushing. It's not like your big laid out river. It's pretty cool looking, you know, fast water system.
It was fast today, so.
And like Mark said, we tried getting into one of the feeder creeks. That was we didn't have any repelling ropes, so that wasn't going to happen.
We went with flip-flops and sandals.
For the look.
Yeah. And you're looking down at it going, I can't work in this. That's about 60 foot dang near vertical. No, I'm good. Get down, we ain't getting back up it.
Yeah, but there were some plunge pools that, oh man, they look good. They look greasy.
They did. And somebody did have a 5-weight with the floating line.
So yeah, so it gets back to the 10-weight and the 5-weight. We had 10-weight for muskie, 5 and 6 weights for smallies. And then we're looking at plan C, going pretty much go throw Jay's raft in a swamp and go fish for largemouth.
Off the side of the road where nobody ever.
With 5 weights, weeds the whole way to the top. So as soon as you hook one, you're like buried in it, and sure enough, it worked.
Sure enough. I couldn't, yeah. I'm like, we're walking down the side of the road, like, I'm like, we're not going
to. You can tell Jay's attitude. When Jay gets the, guys, I don't know. You know he's not into it. But then when he pulls out a 3-pound largemouth, he's like, this was a good idea. I like this, guys. This is good.
Oh, I'm glad I'm still here.
Actually, as soon as we saw how easy it was just to pop the boat right in, you know what I mean? Then it seemed just fine. I didn't know how easy it was going to be to get it over and get the truck.
Oh, yeah, it was super easy.
Yeah, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. It was real quick and easy. So as soon as that, and it was deeper than I thought right then it looked right there, and I'm like, all right. We can float around here and see what happens. And then Chad whacks a largemouth right off the bat on a popper, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be fun. This might just be fun. And there you go. It's just,
you're like
they
your
were
dog.
Hugging.
You're like your dog when someone walks in the door.
Exactly. All friendly.
It's just different because it's not how we typically fish and water we read. And we kind of like assessed it early and where the fish were. And you said a lot of the weeds were up to the
how
surface.
How many acres?
You,
and?
Five.
What? And?
How many acres?
Yeah, an acre, I bet.
Oh, an acre?
Yeah. My mom's is a quarter.
Yeah, you figure like my whole property, no, is almost two. It's probably just bigger than my property. Probably just over 2 acres. 2.5, I'd say, at most.
People don't
you
fish
think,
there normally.
You think an acre? So we'll go with them somewhere between them two numbers, I'm sure.
I mean, it's probably in the neighborhood. It's not a football field long. It's probably 200, 150 yards long.
They say an acre is
100 yards wide, maybe.
Oh,
a
it's definitely longer than a football field.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they said an
you never had to do wind sprints, did you?
No.
Well, they said an acre. Yesterday, I learned an acre is about a football field. So, you got to figure, you know what I mean, a football field. I don't know. Probably was.
Yeah, a couple of them.
Probably was two.
Yeah.
Probably about 2 acre.
So just saying, 2 acre pond
side
of the road.
This
is awful
long about trying to figure out how much an
just,
acre is.
Just trying to give some size of how you know, what we're assessing here. A small 2 acre pond.
Yeah, with pretty much weeds at the surface with pockets. And then you'd have standing timber that had like openings around them a little bit. And then
dead
you'd
timber.
Have like a cabbage blanket on the top where like it did come up through. And it seemed like if you can find either the dead timber or the little open pockets beside that cabbage, there's fish in it, and they were healthy. There's a lot of bluegills.
I ruined a bluegill's day, man.
He hit the top water?
He hit the top water, and I strip set him. And then I pulled him into the cabbage. And I don't know if I foul hooked him or what, but it came off. And then he was flopping in circles on the top. Like
pierced his air bladder.
I did something to him, and we sat there and watched for a minute. I was like,
yo, we were watching intently
like,
for
this is going
to
be a show.
Hammer it.
But nothing came up and got him. But that was really the only bluegill encounter that we had.
Well, the tough part about it, though, too, is you remember, we went and screwed around down at the first place, went to all the different launches, hit like 3 places there, then went and hit like 2 other places, or one, looking for the trout spot. So you figure we never even got started there till what, 9 o'clock, 8:39? Because we left it just after 5.
You guys are in the move.
So it's like we definitely missed a whole first 2.5 hour prime time of them eating.
Yeah.
But they definitely went on another, we had seen them while we were out there. They went on another little feed as soon as the, there were just, man, damselflies just, and all these flies like that, and what the dragonflies just came out like crazy. And man, were they just coming up to the top, smacking the shit out of those too. We saw one hitting a damselfly.
Jumped completely up out of the water, and Jay throws a cast right at it. Thing turns around, whales it.
Game changer, just got crushed in 2 strips. Like, oh, that was a smaller fish, but still a hell of a good time.
The game changer caught the last 2 fish of the day.
Hey, man, turned them in.
We got a couple popper fish. We got one on a 5-inch bucktail fly.
Hollow fly?
Yep.
That was a good decision to go to that. That thing sat and hovered in the water real nice above all that stuff, and you could swim it without getting all caught up and not running a popper.
Well, as cool as the topwater eats are, I love that visual stream rate. That water there is so clear. I'm like, there's no way. If I threw something bright on, he's not going to, like, get it out of here. Sure enough, one came out and watched the whole thing eat. That was cool.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, made it worth it.
We had a couple popper eats, too. Like the one Chad had, first bigger fish we saw. Man, I mean, he just, it was gone. Gone fast. Go ahead.
I was doing a little bit of faster pop.
Well, because you're on a.
I was running a sinking. No, I was.
Sink tip.
Yeah. Yeah, that was that wrong. I was running a sinking line, or a sink tip. And you had to keep it going fast. That way the line wasn't burying down in the weeds.
An integrated sinking tip.
Yes. Because if it was not integrated.
You'd have took it off.
I would have taken it off. And if this was me 7 years ago, I would have cut that motherfucker off. It just had a sink tip on the side. And I'd be casting running line all day.
Yeah, after 10 minutes, I'm like, I got a floating line here.
Yeah, we switched to a slow and immediate sink and on the one and the floating line on the other. And then they started just pounding the poppers, man. Chad hit that nice fish. And then I missed a fish, even between those fish, I watched a good fish wake at this fly.
Sink tips are for fishing your poppers, topwater poppers, underwater. Go ahead, try it. I bet you. I dare you.
Oh, I know, man.
It was still happening with the other one.
Swim's crazy.
But, man, you seen this fish's back just come up and for this fly, and it missed. And I had another one come out and about to swallow a fly. Tried swallowing a fly like 3 times. I couldn't get him to hook up. I'm like, what is going on here? I'm yelling and screaming and being all pissed off at myself. And
then you eat right side of the boat, too.
Yeah. And then the other one, we were just casting out into the abyss. There was a couple nice deep pockets in there where that's where we found the most of the fish were laying, probably like right on the edge where that pocket was. And, man, that thing just come up and engulfed it.
That was the big fish of the day.
Yeah, I was enthused at that point.
Nice largemouth, buddy. Nice largemouth.
Very.
Do we want to tell a teamwork story?
Oh, yeah, let's tell a teamwork story. Oh. That was fun.
I like this story. We row back into this one little back cut. I'm like, all right, guys, here it is. Be careful.
We did see one nice fish in there, too.
I don't think the word careful came out of my mouth, and Mark said, shit. He was 30 feet up in the tree. No, not 30 feet. You're 9 plus however tall you are standing on top of the
seat. So it was probably a neighborhood of 18 foot up there.
Yeah.
And it didn't just stick. It wrapped. So you couldn't just pull on it and break it.
And you had 30-pound mono. So you couldn't pull without risking the fly line core. You're like, what now? We're kind of stuck. So
And it was Jay's rod and line, so he's probably being a little more tender than he'd been with his own stuff.
We videoed Mark fiddle fucking around.
I just broke an 8-weight on Tuesday, jacking around trying to get a fly out, so it wasn't going there.
We videoed Mark fiddle fucking around for probably five or six minutes. Then Jay was like, row me over there. I'm going to climb that tree. So we rowed him over there.
We tried poking it out with a couple different rods, just couldn't get quite close enough. Not enough, like, even another rod.
And standing shaky on a seat of a boat, you know what I mean? That's not the best platform for standing.
No. So I just jumped up into the wireless tree, probably, I don't know, 6 feet up in there probably. And I can get a little better and poked it with the 10-weight, the butt end of a 10-weight. Thank God nothing broke, because it was all dead timber. These trees have been dead. There's a million bird holes dug through them where, you know, that's where birds live. There's bird feeders all over this place. And
those are duck boxes.
Are duck boxes? Bird wood feeders. Duck? Are those wood duck holes and stuff? Or are those just...
No, but the boxes are wood duck boxes.
Oh, okay.
That was almost as good as sticking the man bear pig about 10 foot up in a tree over a 6 foot deep hole. Took 4 of us to get it back.
That's exactly what it reminded me of.
Yep.
So, Jace, you went exploring today also.
Yeah, went out fishing with a friend of mine who don't do anything but throw repellas or troll repellas. He loves repellas. There's no doubt about it. This kid, he'll go flick out his box and, like, I kind of feel bad because I showed him, like, steelhead trolling, like, near the lake, but not in the lake. You know, that's that good stuff where they don't know where they're at and you catch shit out of them. Now he's all addicted to it and shit. So I never did that with him, but it was my first time out on his canoe. He got a sweet little setup. A couple different, like, all kind of shit on there. He got a big-ass fish finder, like a Lowrance 7.
On a canoe?
Yeah, all these little... like special holders for rods. He got fly rod holders on the boat because they're like special styles to where you can open them up, and it's probably for fly rod trolling and shit. Like, it shit's set up, no doubt about it. But little canoe, you pick it up, you put it in, throw a battery in, you run 2 motors on it. Sometimes they do, and it's efficient. Like, if you were You know, if he got it down to where he knew where to hold, like he needs to read that, get that water reading mentality. Because I was like, let me fish through here. Just, you know, use the motor sparingly. And he was like overdoing it, underdoing it. I'm like, you're cruising, man. Slow down. I got to try to cast a couple of times without my, you know, forming a big ass loop in my line. So, nah, we fished our ass off. Cool little place. It's real local, but full of muskie. Didn't run into him. Talked to a guy the other day, showed me a picture, said in that area he caught a 40-plus inch. It was a good fish, just like Saturday or something. But they're always there. There's no doubt about it. It's one of those places where just that section of river holds fish, just probably right along with all the other sections. It's a public launch they finally put in not too long ago, trying to attract more of that like tourism through the, it's kind of, I wouldn't say it's downtown, but you're, this is urban fishing, you know, more so it's in the country setting, but it's, you could fish that river along 5-6 different towns we know, you know, so pretty cool place. Seen a couple kayakers, nobody down where we were fishing though, so we were the only guys really beating it up, one guy, you know, by the launch fishing, so didn't get him. I fished my ass off, I casted a lot.
Did it look like there should be just tons of smallmouth there?
Yeah, it's a different look river-wise for me, not like our local, got a lot of rock, a lot of breaks, you know, different stuff you know you're throwing at some kind of, you know, fish home. This is
shopping cart.
Yeah, this is all like a lot of dead water, some current in it. We didn't go, you know, many miles, like almost 2 miles we went through, but didn't catch nothing. I thought I was just going to see flashes, you know what I mean? You fling it over to the bank or a couple of trees here and there, some underhanging stuff. Fishing through
there. You just got a taste of musky fishing.
That's what it was. I was throwing, you know, I thought I might musky fish, but you're throwing, you know, 7-inch fly. I guess that goes anywhere, catch anything. So it was good viz. It wasn't, the river wasn't too high. It was definitely, you guys, your boat would have handled well. You could have fished. You know, it wasn't flooded like you said. All of our other stuff's pretty high for the next couple of days, but this river's, I think it's a little bit less water than our local, takes on less, but it's got, I don't know, 10 different like dams on it, so there's like sections you could fish on it.
So this canoe, is it big enough and stable enough you can stand up in?
I stood up and fished, even in some like, I guess, turbulent water up near that dam. Not waves, but, you know, moving around on us, but
it was nervous
the
water.
The front. Just is not operable. You don't have the room like where the front seat is set up. You got, you know, 2 feet to do everything underneath you. So I was able to cast and stuff in there. It wasn't bad. Definitely like standing up for sitting down trying to fish. I was like, dude, if we hook a muskie, he asked why. He's like, oh, you don't need that net. I was like, yeah, when you do need this net, you won't say that. I threw the big net in there, right? That's what you need when you want to be safe or at least have a shot at one. What are you going to do? Pick up he got like a little hoop net, you know what I mean? Like 30 inches around, but it ain't got no depth or nothing. I was like, you're not putting a big fish in there. You better get to shore, so.
Jay also has a net story from today.
Sure did.
Net man. You're the net man.
Yeah, I'm an idiot.
Net man Jay.
Less a net man.
There's going to be a video out there where you're going to be able to watch the net
float away.
Slowly drift
even,
away.
Couldn't even
abyss.
Hook the clip. It's got a clip on the end and everything. It doesn't hook it on anything.
Well, Chad was at the other end of the boat. He's the one who nets the fish because Mark's rowing. He swings them in, you know, swings them into the fish, you know, and that all worked pretty well every time we did it today. But yeah, nope. The fish started struggling a little bit. I was trying to get my second hand underneath them, and, you know, there it is. I started paying attention to other things, and I'm
an idiot. Look at this big bass I caught off the side of the road. Oh, my God. On a popper. That net, man. Catch of a lifetime.
The hell with that net. That's all right. I'm going to have to go get a new one.
Now you got to get a 5-pound bass replica.
Yeah. Yeah, you better go. Yeah, make it 7 pounds while we're at it.
Add 2 inches to it.
Yeah, and the popper.
Like you're measuring the wiener.
Mount the popper on it.
The popper has to be giant, too.
make the popper bigger.
Yeah, just a giant popper.
Yeah, there's got to be some giant ones in there, though.
There does, yeah. If there are that many that are within the, what, the dude, 3 pound range.
Did you stick your oar down at all and try to check depth, or?
I did once, and it went deep into the weeds, and I couldn't touch. So I was like,
eh. So there's potentially over 10 feet that ain't getting like a winter kill everything down, keeps its.
Hmm. There's a couple of real deep spots.
I was gonna say, we got to fish that when the weeds are down.
Yeah, in the springtime.
Spring and fall. Winter.
Oh, go there before any weeds even grow.
Yep.
Like early end of February type stuff when they're pre-spawn and they really want to eat.
I
throw you a changer
ice
across
off.
There.
We'll be on there and ice off.
Yeah.
Well, ice fish it.
We'll be ice fishing it. Jace will be on there.
I don't know about that. That stays warm. Yeah. Or something. I think that's why it's so set up like it is. All them weeds and stuff stays warm, where it's at.
That would be something there, too, in like December when it's cold and that water's a little bit warmer. Go in there and just fish big swim stuff.
The
slow.
Standing timber.
Yeah, just fish it slow because it's going to be all open and deep. Mm. That'd be cool.
Couldn't touch a bass myself today, but I was out earlier in the week.
What'd you throw?
Today I was throwing, I don't know, bass musky flies. I cast my ass off, felt
like
my arm.
Hollow
like,
flies, just everything flies, whatever.
Did
you throw a game changer?
No, I had.
Well,
a,
that's why you didn't catch
it. No way. I had a pretty sweet, like a dom fly on a big, I don't know, big synthetic, like double, more or less look like a deceiver, but chartreuse. That's what I started out with. I was like, they're going to see it. I'm making them see it. Fished it hard for a while. I was like, maybe just change something natural. Threw on what I would say mainly your minnow color, you know, some black, some white, nothing special, flash, and fished it, dude. Seen a few fish like come up, break water. I couldn't tell what they were. Cast it at their asses, that's for sure. Yeah, didn't see no game fish. I don't know what the hell was. Either the switch was off or, because it was good water. We fished it. I had a decent chance, even though I was fishing in that canoe. It was tough, but I was still doing what I do. You know what I mean?
You able to stand up and cast?
Yeah, through most of it. That's nice. A lot of backhand because I was up front. That wears on your forearm a little bit. You could tell after you back cast too much.
I hear you, man. Wait, let's go take a break, and we will come back with Chris Galvin. And when we're done with him, we'll finish our week's review. Sound good, guys?
Word.
Alrighty.
Cool. It's great.
And we are back with Chris Galvin from Galvin Guiding. What's happening, Chris?
Hey, doing not too much. Just doing great. Sitting here with some wet boots. Just got done wet wading Bear Creek just outside of Denver.
So when you do Bear Creek, are you trout fishing or?
Yeah, Bear Creek is a wild trout fishery. It's a freestone. There's no real tailwater releases, and it's a really healthy bug ecosystem in there. Trout stay kind of small, but every now and then they'll get a little surprise. Like yesterday, we had one up to 14 inches. Given this year, we had really high flows, but so much snow and so much snow late, our runoff season is just way delayed, probably 3 or 4 weeks delayed. So the rivers right now are, most of them are unapproachable for conventional or definitely for fly angling.
So for those of you who don't know you, you want to kind of give us a little history about yourself?
Sure. I've been guiding now. This is my 15th season of guiding. I did all sorts of things before I found myself in this world. But fishing was always a passion going back to maybe age 5. And I grew up in the Midwest in Ohio, chasing species around there and did a lot of time in Michigan in the summer and then Florida sometimes in the winter. Always wanted to fish. Moved out here in the 90s to Denver, Colorado, and realized pretty quickly that my conventional fishing game needed to change, or I needed to add some new things to it. So got involved with fly fishing, hired some guides here in the middle 90s, and realized pretty quickly I was very addicted and was getting up to the river like 2-3 times a week, even though I was in a financial world job. And next thing I know, I was kind of between careers and went over to a nearby fly shop and asked if I'd be willing, or if they'd be willing to, you know, try me out as a guide for the next season. This was in a canyon called Cheeseman Canyon. It's kind of well known. It's on the South Platte. It's basically the first 3 miles of a tailwater below a dam there called Cheeseman Dam, obviously. And it's got nice sized fish, really scenic, giant boulders, and clear, cool water all year round. So I was in there all the time. And next thing I know, guide service tries me out. My first season starts, and I think they were looking for somebody who wanted to hump in there. It's at least a 30-minute hike to get in there. So next thing I know, they were sending me in there all the time with clients, and I was loving it.
That's when you get, or what you get when you're the FNG, right?
Yeah, exactly. They were like, you know, you can hump in there and die in heat all day and carry around their drinks and cooler, you know, and it was a lot of work. But I realized I was young, dumb, and eager, you know, just to be guiding. And I also was very enthusiastic about that spot. And it's still a little techy there. You know, it's a tailwater, and fish can be a little technical. But I was pumping stomachs and taking samples home. And I was, you know, getting more and more into tying and trying to get closer to what, you know, what was going on in the river all the time. And, boy, it got me up the learning curve really quickly. Just having to face that kind of that challenging fishery.
So how long were you doing that before you got into competitive fly fishing?
Not too long. I started guiding, I think this is my 15th season guiding, and my first foray into competitive trout fishing was the 2006 National Fly Fishing Championships, which they held out of Boulder. And the story goes, they wanted a team to represent Colorado, guys that they thought were just fishy people from locals, and I was actually working a winter at fly shop in Bass Pro at the time, and one of the other guys was there, knew about this stuff, and had already been asked to be on this Colorado team. And he asked me, because a lot of the waters were going to be waters that I had been guiding or had experience guiding. So that's why I got kind of picked to be on this team. And next thing I know, I'm competing, and I knew nothing about Euro nymphing. I had barely still water fished for trout, but just kind of did my best and, you know, winging it, and somehow placed 10th out of like 75 people. And I was ahead of all these really big names, and I'm not going to name the names, but I was really surprised I finished so high. And our team got third. So all of a sudden I'm like, huh, maybe I have something at this. So from then on, I just kind of looked for any regional events that I could find. And basically, most of my events now center around Fly Fishing Team USA and that circuit, chasing that to get on the team. And eventually, obviously, the goal would be to represent the country at the world tournaments.
So you're still active in it?
Yeah, I'm still active in it a lot, yeah. I did an event this year in southern Idaho, and that was great. One of the things I love about it, A, is, you know, I love being competitive. B, the people. And C, like, the tactics and the flies, and there's a sharing culture, especially as the competitions have wound down, where we're all kind of sharing and we're all making each other better, talking about tactics and flies, and it makes your game razor sharp. So if you want to come back to guiding, you know, I feel sharper. I can explain things better. I may have picked up a new trick for the fishing game, you know, from someone else. And same thing, I could probably give them some tricks too.
And that's all trout, all that tournament kind of stuff is all trout stuff, right?
Yeah, it's all trout. It's all based on links. Everyone has a judge. Sometimes we're our own judges. We call it competitor control, but most of the bigger ones will have, each angler will have a judge assigned it. It's tricky to describe the breakdown, but there's teams, and then there's also individual results. And so you work together, but like, you'll never be fishing near your teammates. You're always in you versus one from each of the other teams, and that makes a group. So if there's 12 teams, there'll be 12 people in your group, and you'll fish against those same guys the whole time.
So how does it work for, I guess, what's the roles for the fly? And then, like, you fish like certain sections and rotate through?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, the only time we do like a rotation would be like on a lake rotation where we're fishing from a bank, and they'll have us rotate three times, typically do 1 hour, then we move. We have like 15 minutes to move, then another hour, then 15 minutes to move, then another hour, sometimes 10 minutes. but that's one. But the flies are a little different there. A lot of the competitive fishing started in Europe. So the organizing body's out of France called FIPS Mouche, and they have the official rules, and it's pretty, you know, pretty long, but the short of it is the things that, you know, we have to abide by are barbless hooks, no attached weight, no attached flotation devices, 50 centimeters between flies, and yeah, you'll have your own judge. We do it off length. They'll have a little measuring trough. You know, the beats are assigned, like say you're on a river, you'll get a randomly assigned beat, like beat, let's say I got beat 3. That's all randomly assigned, so I won't have fished B3. I won't have a chance to even sometimes look at it until I get there and check it out. But the idea is that, you know, you have to sort of just flash it, just get there and go, and you're beat.
Now, how long are these beats?
They're typically up to 200 yards. I'd say one to 200 yards. And the organizers who put these together, they typically understand what trouty water looks like, and they try to make it as even as possible. And we also, in a competition, we'll do multiple sessions that are 3 hours each. And that sort of evens out, you know, the whole, oh, I got a terrible beat, you know, or I got a great beat. Sort of evens that out, you know what I mean? Like when you do four different sections. Sometimes, obviously, lakes are involved too. And lakes from a boat we call lock style, L-O-C-H. And that's some of the fairest fishing you can have, because everyone has the access to all the lake, and yeah, it's really, really, really up to your skills.
So you say you're not allowed to add any flotation,
right?
Does that
you can use a dry fly?
Okay, I was gonna say, is that a hopper?
No, you can use a hopper. You can't use a thingamabobber or anything, you know, a piece of poly yarn or anything like that. So we're using, you know, everyone's, you know, fishing Euro style or tight line style, and long rods, typically 10 to 11 feet in the 2 to 4 weight class. I throw a 10.5-3 most of the time, but I have usually a couple different rods strung up.
Are you using like mono all the way up onto your reel, or are you guys using like the fly
line? No, we're not.
There's
a rule about that too, because that was one of the things that people started doing, is just spooling their whole fly reel with mono, you know, instead of any fly line. So they made it so your leader has to be up to twice the length of your rod. That's another rule. So then the guys kind of, the workaround for that was, we're going to use coated braid that's so crazy thin that it might as well be mono, you know. That's kind of, that was the quick workaround that some guys developed. And right now, the latest controversy is the squirmy worm, which just got banned. it's been a really,
bad news,
really controversial fly. Our USA kids were just stomping on these Europeans with the squirmy worm. And they're good. They were great anglers. They are great anglers anyway. But they developed the squirmy worm, and they started terrorizing the trout when they go to these world tournaments. And that's one of the reasons I think they got a really bad name, because it just seems like such a kind of trashy fly. But so they made a rule about extruded materials and molded materials. And the only exception now is like rubber legs for like a past rubber leg style fly, a few things like that. You can't have molded bodies or, you know, a molded spermy worm.
How about a mop fly? Extruded. Is that still
mop flies? Mops allowed. And what's funny about competitive fishing is how far competitive fishing has really pushed the game of fly fishing. And I think it's made it a lot more fun for people. Some of the stuff that, like, people are just seeing now and learning about now, like jig flies with these long, you know, 10-foot two weights and 10.5-3 weights. I mean, we were doing this stuff a long time ago, and it just didn't really catch on, you know. And people would poo-poo competitive fly fishing and say, like, you know, what? I either just saying it's stupid, or, you know, I go out to fish for myself for fun to relax, blah blah blah. But not realizing we're doing all those same things, and a lot of these guys are incredibly fishy people. They love it too, and they're just as passionate about it on their free time. And they're big, usually into the environment and protecting the resources. And, you know, these are really stewards of the sport, you know, the kind of people that you would want around the sport. So I it kind of troubles me that it gets such a bad name at times.
So do you take any of, or do you ever get clients that say, hey, will you take me fishing for the day, but can we do like competitive style fishing for the day?
Oh, yeah. I'm getting a lot of that now. So, oh, and I actually have, on any river of any size, I usually have my anglers on 10-foot rods anyway, and with a sighter on, you know, with a Euro rake to a sighter. A sighter is a piece of fluorescent colored line monofilament that's in the end of your system on your leader system, so you can see it. You hover that colored piece of line above the water, so that's how we can recognize a take. Either that will straighten, it'll stop, it'll shoot downward, or you'll feel the fish. Those are kind of the four different ways you could identify your strikes. But, you know, I can start people out with an indicator on that sighter, and then if they get better, I can take it off, sort of like training wheels, and put them on just a straight Euro setup, and it seems to fish better. I've had an experience once where I told this guy I wanted him to fish through this, like, 50-yard section, fish as hard as he can with these flies, and he did. And then I let it rest for about 5 to 10 minutes, and I said, okay, I want you to fish it again. He's like, what do you mean? I just fished right through it. I said, well, no, we're going to take the indicator off, and you're going to fish through there one more time with the same flies and see what happens. And he caught two monster fish out of there when he was fishing Euro that he did not touch with the indicator, and plus a couple other ones. So it was really interesting, and it shows me that the tactics that we've worked on are going to make everybody catch more fish, have more fun out there if they're willing to learn some new stuff.
So in your spare time, do you ever go out and just rip streamers through there?
I'm not a big streamer guy. You know, out here in the West, there are definitely people that are like super streamer focused, and I'm not one of them, sadly. But I do it from time to time. But no, I'm not a big streamer guy.
I was gonna say, like, in all the competition and the trout stuff, have you got to travel abroad and do that as well?
I've never gone overseas, but I have hit about 10 or 11 different states. And that's one of the besides meeting the great people, learning the new skills, the traveling and seeing some other interesting trout water sort of forces me to take little vacations, you know, and hit some cool stuff. I love North Carolina for fishing. I had a lot of fun there. Oregon was the last Nationals. It was out of Bend, Oregon. That was a lot of fun. Got to hit these lakes that were just incredibly fertile for trout, and the trout were just super thick-bodied, averaging like 20 inches at times, and just monster, powerful trout. So Crane Prairie, I don't want to hotspot everything, but Crane Prairie was a reservoir that would just kind of blew my mind for that.
So when you are doing the lakes in Oregon, let's say, is it a kind of a hike to get back into them, or do they pick relatively accessible ones?
No, they just like that lake, for instance, has a campground, and they have boats they run out, and we were using their boats as our comp boats. They had little motors on them, and we were putting around, and so you sit kind of perpendicular to the way a boat would go when you're and then you're casting downwind, and typically this is this whole lock style thing. You have like a sea anchor, we call a drogue, that slows down the drift of the boat broadside, and you're casting next to your partner. We were sitting on these boards called thwart boards, THWART, I think, thwart boards, and it's like you're on a saddle and you're casting, and it was a real easy way to fish because you're up kind of nice and high and casting with the wind, like I said, and there was a crazy damsel hatch during that time, and I was pulling damsels. I think I got second place in that heat and figured out the kind of the retrieve they wanted, and yeah, started pounding them. I mean, we had damsels crawling on the boat and stuff too, so I knew that's what they were going after in the lake.
So in the lake, you're doing more of it, even if it is a smaller fly, you're still doing a nice little retrieve. It's not just, you know, you're not just kind of the
we're talking wavy lake with wind. I'm not going to throw a dry fly. I'm not going to do much with static fishing. I'm going to cast and retrieve. So I have about 20 some different spooled lines that sink at different rates and in different ways. You know, some of the tip sinks, some of the belly sinks, some of the even sink, and they're all rated for how fast they sink too, like how many inches per second. So, like that day, I think I was using something that was not that fast of a sinking, maybe a 1.5 inch or 2 inch per second line. So that was probably down maybe 3-4 feet catching the fish. But no, that's definitely a cast to retrieve tactic for the most part. But as things get calmer, the fish can go deeper, and they want things going even slower at times, so we have to go to different tactics. But that's a kind of usually around mountain lakes with trout, you're going to have some wind.
So, Chris, to change subjects just a little bit, I was scrolling through your website, and you guide for two different species, not just trout.
Right.
Yeah. How did you get into guiding for carp? I know we love carp fishing, and it's just we don't hear about many guides for it.
Yeah, you know, I guess you have to work even backwards before that. Like, I just started carp fishing because we had a resort. I carp fished growing up in Ohio. I would occasionally do it with, you know, like, dough baits and things like that. And I just enjoyed fighting a really big fish. I thought it was fun catching a 10-plus pound fish. I was just a kid, and to me, I didn't see it as trash. I didn't see it as anything wrong. I was like, why wouldn't I want to catch the big fish? So got here. We have a resource in the South Platte River that doesn't freeze, stays clear most of the year, doesn't get too deep, and we have fish that we can sight fish to, almost 12 months a year. And I'm like, so the next thing I knew, I was down by the river starting to try to figure out these fish and started kind of patterning them and what they liked, and I was catching them. And I don't think anyone else was fishing with them, maybe except Barry Reynolds was about the only other person I knew. I felt like they were just easy, and I'm like, oh my God, I would not tell anyone. There was no social media posting, no hot spotting. I didn't tell a soul because I was going down and having multi-fish days, and I thought it was the most amazing thing. So next thing I know, this tournament pops up, founded by Denver Trout Unlimited, called the Carp Slam, and I got in that, and that's made me just even more focused on it. And eventually, I won a few Carp Slams here recently and decided that my skills are enough to guide for carp. And what's weird is it's a nerve-wracking game to guide for a species that is a lower percentage catch, you know, like trout. I've only had three trips out of maybe 1,000-plus trips for trout that I've had a blank on. And, you know, it's usually a half-day trip. People are beginners, and I never really worry about it with trout. But for carp, I get up, you know, I get really nervous for it. I try to set the expectation level right, but, you know, if you're not on your game that day, they'll just humble you, as you guys probably know.
So, you know, you said you get to fish for them 12 months out of a year. They're open. Do you guide based on season or just what somebody asked you to do? You know, is it just based on, hey, I want to trout fish, so we're going to trout fish, carp fish?
Oh, no. The carp fish is just a niche, and if someone usually requests them, I'll get, like, a bunch of requests in the May and June kind of time period when it's really, really good, and then again, as Carp Slam comes up, I'll start getting requests for that kind of trip to people that want to train for Carp Slam.
And you said it's kind of a niche. Are the guys that request it, are they a little bit of different people?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's people who are like, let's say they feel like they've done all sorts of achievements in fishing, and they've caught 1,000 zillion trout on their own, but they want a new challenge. You know, eventually the sport offers unlimited challenges and almost unlimited species and places, so some of them are just kind of want to change of pace. I met some interesting characters for sure.
So it's all river fishing for your carp? Like,
yeah, well, the river's available most of the time, but in certain months, like from, let's say, about May 1st till sometime in October, you can do still waters around town too. In the greater metro area, I have a lot of still water action too.
Do you hold those for your personal days off?
Yeah, I love still waters as well. I haven't been carping lately, and I'm actually jonesing to go. So I've been guiding trout so much that if I get a day off, I want to go. I'm probably going to go chase carp, especially if it's sunny and nice, you know. Obviously, the easier they are to see, the easier they are to catch.
So when I started carp fishing, I was throwing big, gaudy crayfish for them. And then recently, after talking to Dan Frazier and stuff, I've changed my game up a little bit. Now I'm throwing, like, little freaking nymphs and damselfly nymphs and stuff. What tactic are you going for? Or does it change daily?
Yeah, you know, like, I would watch the fly swaps go by, and everyone just kind of seemed to be tying a variation of a little rusty crayfish. And I'm like, man, there's so many other food items that these carp will respond to, and sometimes they'll respond to things that are just straight attractor patterns. I mean, they have no basis in nature, and they'll eat them. So I played around with a lot, and like some of my flies that I use, like especially either guiding or in tournaments, are nothing like any of that stuff that you've seen. Because I think the crayfish got really overplayed. So no, but like I'd say I'm a little more on the techie side, but I'm also not afraid to experiment with a tractor type stuff. I can't be too specific on the fly because
it's been a
real winning pattern.
What? What do you mean?
You want to win another carp slam?
Exactly. I thought about am I going to release this to Umpqua or some
this
company
is,
or am
this
I going
to tournament podcasting?
I'm going to keep it to myself until I find something that's even better, but I haven't yet.
Man, you're so not like years. Hey, you're not like Jason here. He just shouts out where he caught every fish.
Oh yeah.
As soon as he he's
side of the road, man.
Burns a spot right off.
Right the side of the road.
Down. Flying
off.
I'm a kind of
secretive dude, and I know it's not great for guiding, you know, like people that seem to shout it from the rooftops, you know, can do better, but I'm a little more of a private guy and I wish I could be more outgoing. Maybe this podcast is a step in that direction.
So speaking of the guiding, how did it go from actually guiding for the fly shops and stuff to opening your own guiding service?
Well,
was that nerve wracking?
Really nerve wracking. I realized I had a lot of repeats and referrals of people that were requesting me directly, and I was just kind of growing tired of who I was working for at the time, and you know, don't want to mention them either. So I just thought, hey, this is the time. And looking back on it, I should have done it sooner. I studied entrepreneurship at school, always enjoyed small businesses. I love marketing, even though I don't like marketing myself, personally, but I do like marketing. And yeah, I just thought it was time. You know, I think my skill set's there and clients, like I said, you know, that my reviews seem to show it and the repeats and referrals seem to show it. It's weird being a small outfit in a giant outfit world, you know, like out here, we have some mega shops that kind of run people through, I think like cattle and like a rafting company, you know, they take an approach where it's just run them through. And I take a much more crafted approach.
So what's a normal day? Could people book, is this all hiking? You don't do anything on boats or?
The only boats we're doing right now are stillwater. Most of the float fishing that we have access to from the Denver area is a little too far to be a reasonable time frame for a day, so we do lots of walkway trips. And luckily one of the main state rivers, the South Platte, which has a really granity bottom that's not too slick, so people can easily get traction even at higher flows and wade that river. And that's one of the main states. And today we were on Bear Creek. It's super small fishery. A lot of times you don't even have to get your feet wet to cast across it, although today we were. And I don't know, they're beginners. They pulled, I don't want to give you numbers, but probably between 20 and 25 fish today, something like that.
That's not bad. Yeah.
Is that dry or all like nymphing or?
This is nymphs. And the water looks, when you'll see pictures of it, it looks huge. It looks really off color. But when you're at the water, you can see that there's maybe foot and a half of visibility, maybe 2 feet. And their fish just sit in the soft water right now. They do move out to the faster water as the temperature warms up, because that creek can change temperature greatly. But in the morning, they're definitely in the slow water, and that's where we're finding them.
And
go ahead.
No, what was that?
Oh no, I realize I'm all over the place. I'm talking about today's guide trip, but
oh no, that's perfect.
It all kind of interrelates to me, you know, because you know, I share, like, and I'll go up and practice fish, and then I can share it with my other guides, and they can tell me what their experiences were, and then I'm throwing experimental flies while I'm out on this guide trips with clients, you know, like, if I have one fly that's working, I'll keep that on there, but then I can get to play with all my variants, you know, that I've been wanting to try, and I already know that I have one fly on the fish are going to eat, but then I see how my new one compares to it, and so I get to play around with it like that.
And you do have multiple guides that work with you, correct?
Yeah, you know, we use a contractor model, and so I have a few other guides that I can source out and I trust, you know, because it's obviously the same thing. It's nerve-wracking from this standpoint that I put my name on the business, so that trip happens, you know, it's going to follow me in some way. So I make sure these guys are really ready to go when they go.
So what's a day look like on the water with Chris? Are we eating a shore lunch? We starting early? We ending late?
No, I'm. you don't need to start all that early for trout. That's another nice thing. Like, unless you're having 100-degree days, fishing just gets better as the water warms. Warming water gets the insects moving, gets the fish moving. I probably meet clients a lot of times. Like today, I'm at 7:30, which is a little earlier than normal, but 8:30, something like that. Lunch-wise, I'm city-based, so I can actually go to Whole Foods for lunches. You're going to get a Whole Foods, whatever you want, crafted sandwich. And, yeah, we fish typically like a full day. We get 7 hours at a venue. So if we arrive at the venue at, let's say, 9 a.m., we'd be fishing until 4 p.m. And half days are 4 hours of guaranteed fishing when you're, like, once you're rigged up, ready to go.
Do you get a lot of people, do you guys get a lot of time to dry fly fish? Or do you get a lot of people asking to dry fly fish?
Yeah, we do. And we get people that want to come out just for that. I've had guys come out and do two days with me, and that's all they wanted to do. Didn't care where we went. They were only going to throw a dry fly. So I get that every now and then. But our dry fly season, we have some good stuff in spring. We have blue wings. And then right now, the flows are too high, or we would be having other hatches like PMVs and things that might start making some appearances. Caddis has been a good year for caddis, though. And then as soon as things start coming down in, like, August, we'll have all sorts of terrestrial action, probably caddis, more caddis. And then as you get into fall, you know, it starts blending. You know, you get some hoppers also coming in there, and then packs of blue wings later on. So, yeah, and I enjoy that, too. I actually enjoy dry flies, but I don't insist on dry flies, that's for sure.
So the primary game for you is to take people out nymphing, or
tons of nymphing, tons of nymphing.
No doubt,
that's the truth. But I'm willing to try anything. Like if someone said, "Hey, I really want to work on my streamer game," like I'm gonna go out and streamer fish the heck out of it with them. You know, so if those requests are there, I'll take them to the best place I know of for streamers right now at this flow, and that's what we'll do.
So, Chris, can you walk us through a year in Denver, Colorado?
Yeah, so I don't want to let the secret out, but I think the secret's already out. We're growing like crazy here, but we don't have that cool...
cold,
but Denver...
I said all over the place, huh? All kinds of different stuff.
Yeah, but Denver's growing like crazy, so... I'm just saying, like, the winters aren't that cold, so we can get up and fish in the winter. I kind of like to just take December and January off. So my season starts in February. I usually have some bookings starting to come in towards the end of February and March. By then, I'll be a little more into tying, more trips coming in. This year, we had such good snow that the bookings were down from other years. When you have bad snow years, we'll have a lot more trips because the guys won't, you know, a lot of dads or whoever won't go skiing. They'll go fishing instead, so... that is actually a secret I'm willing to let out. Like from the middle of March till about maybe all the way through till end of April, you can have amazing fishing. Some of the biggest fish of the year can come in that time. And it seems like the average, like it's a lot of rainbows and cutthroats or cut bows, but it seems like the average is a lot bigger. You know, these fish come out of winter. They're trying to put on some weight. They're going to preparing for a spawn. And you have access to, like, you know, 18 to 22 inch fish. It's hilarious. So yeah, that takes me into March, April. By May, things are getting in full swing. You know, we're starting to think about runoff. This year, runoff came way late, so we had a really cool wet spring, and it kept raining, kept staying cold, kept snowing. So bookings were down, I think, a little because of that. People didn't want to be on the water. Once the weather warms, though, people start thinking about fishing and the bookings go up. And this year, unfortunately, coincides with really high water. You know, so when you're having a barbecue at home, you know, and you're not, you're thinking, ah, let's go outside, it'd be fun to fish, but you don't know that the river is, you know, at 8,000 CFS because there was all that snow over the winter. So, yeah, basically, all I would wish if we could skew it a little earlier, it would have been great this year. But no, it's going to make for a really long season this year. Flows are never going to get to where they're too warm to fish. We're going to have nice, healthy depth all year. So last year we had voluntary restrictions on a lot of our river systems because of the heat. Water was getting too warm. It was getting above like 68 degrees. And we had to voluntarily shut down to save the fish. you know, a fish that fights at that temperature can build up so much lactic acid that it doesn't make it after release. So we don't have that problem this year, though. That takes me through, you know, summer, a lot of nymphing throughout the summer, get into August especially, and it's turning more to a dry dropper game. And then, yeah, fall, get some streamer activity for browns. Browns seem to like chase streamers, if you'd like. And then my season typically winds down towards the end of October. And then I'll usually have one sputtering of trips sometime in the middle of November and then some around Thanksgiving week when people come out to visit. And then and that's about it.
So you said you had a like self-imposed not fishing days because of the water temperatures. If someone has a day booked with you, what happens? Is there like a plan B?
We ran into this last year. So let's say I was fishing on the Eagle River, and the Eagle River is a freestone, no dam. So the water, I was just constantly running a digital thermometer in the water, and it was the water can warm up so fast because it's shallow and the sun's so bright, the temperature outside, the air is warm, sun's warm. You could watch that water warm up 10 degrees, you know, in your first little session. So, but when that would happen, though, I would just simply, hey, let's go to the car. We're going to drive, you know, 10 miles upriver. And I would drive 10 miles upriver and we could find cooler water. And then same thing, if it starts getting too warm there, I'd just keep going upriver. Otherwise, I would say, let's do it. Let's book a half day. We could take advantage of all the first part of the day and not have to worry about the heat of the afternoon. And that was, again, we had such a low water year. We don't have that problem right now. So.
And then if you book someone for a half day, would you show them a couple craft breweries around town the second half?
Yeah, we can always have, like, you know, or just keep some in the cooler for sure. Oh, yeah, I'm always happy to help people find other things to do, and there's plenty of stuff to do here in the summer. So absolutely.
Well, given that, if somebody, you know, like, gets pushed off of a trip like that planned with you, do you give them an option, like, hey, we can go fish for carp? Because carp, they don't build the lactic acid, and you can fish for them whenever.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot of people still have this. I would say the average client that I get that isn't that in the know thinks carp is just a trash fish, and it's that stigma is still there, and it's so strange to me that stigma exists. Plus, the weird stigma of catch and keep still exists. You know, you don't realize how much it exists when you're hanging around a bunch of fishy people, but in the general public, a lot of people don't even know that we all, you know, like to practice catch and release and that carp are a lot of fun. And I would love to start changing some of those paradigms.
Some people grill them up.
Yeah. Carp, I mean, they were brought here as a food fish. That was one of the reasons they made the jump across the pond.
I think it's
a terrific fish.
Would you like to get into the carp slam a little bit? Like, how's it work? Is it a weekend-long event? You said TU puts it on, correct?
Yeah, Denver's own Trout Unlimited branch does it. And it was a fly fishing trout friend of mine named Tim Emery who kind of masterminded the beginning of it because he was competitive trout fishing at the time. And he's like, maybe we should do this for carp. And so 12 years ago, or I guess about 13 years ago, the first one went down. And it's run as a pro-am, so the AMs were paying to fish with these pros for carp, and then the fishing happens on one day. The events happen on Friday night, fishing's on Saturday, and there's one more event Saturday night. And, yeah, that's the tournament. And so, yeah, the pro fishes and the AM fishes for half the time each for the first 2 hours in 30-minute intervals. Then the last hour of the first 3 hours, both can fish at the same time. And then you go to lunch for 2 hours, and then you take then you do the afternoon session, which is like 2 to 5, same kind of setup, back and forth. So what I found is the more I can help the amateur angler get into fish, the better the team does. So I really guide hard when I'm working with an AM, trying to get them to catch a fish or two.
Do you know the AM before the
no
the weekend?
No. This year it's changed. So the AMs get to pick their pro if they want, and they can work out a deal with the pro. So I think I have my AM worked out right now. But in years past, it was all randomly assigned, like out drawing paper out of a hat. And so I didn't even meet him till the night before. So of the I'm pretty happy with the fact that I had four different amateurs in the last 4 years that I've won, and they were all different, and a lot of them didn't have much experience at all, maybe not even caught a carp yet. So I'm happy with that.
And so now when you do something like that, like, how do you get somebody to understand how to carp fish?
Well, you know, I start talking to them. What I was doing, I shouldn't give all these secrets, what I tell my slam, but I start talking to them that night, big time, about, like, what we're, you know, if they haven't done it with me before, like, this is what we're going to be doing, this is what we're going to be looking for, here's what I'd like you to wear, here's our approach to these spots, here's how we don't spook the fish, I'm going to help you rig up your leader and your fly system, and yeah, I just do it a lot verbally the night before. I was just trying to cram them full of knowledge the second I figured out who my am was.
You said something about what you want them to wear. I mean, are you guys wearing, like, the same color shirts just because of your team, or are you wearing, like, a certain color because you don't want to spook the fish?
That's a great question, and I am a super camo freak about carp. And, again, we're dealing with clear water. Fish can see you. They can see movement. And just like if you're hunting anything, I think carp fishing with a fly is a lot like hunting. And I think the closer I can get, the better. It's almost like archery hunting, and the closer you can get, the better. But the more concealed you can be, the closer you can get. And I'm the same way with carp. So I camo up head to toe. I mean, if you see the pictures, I read a recap on Carp Slam. If you type in Google Carp Slam recap, you can see the pictures at the end, and I'm all like camo head to toe. I like to be really stealthy, get really close, and minimize as many of the variables as I can to get to the fish. A lot of guys just want to stand back and treat it like they're bone fishing on a flat, and you can get away with that sometimes, but most of the time I'm a lot closer and I'm ambushing the fish.
And I know this might be a secret, but I got to ask. You said how you build a leader. I know when I carp fish, I just run a straight piece of 17-pound test. Are you tapering? Okay. Or?
No, look, one of the things I shouldn't tell you this, but,
you don't need to, we understand trade secrets.
No, it's okay. It's not that big a deal. And I don't want to tell you, I use normally 2X fluorocarbon, and, the fluorocarbon I love is Rio Fluoroflex Plus, which I think measures out at their effective breaking strength of, I think, 12.6 pounds. All my carp fishing I'm doing with loop knots. I use non-slip mono loops because I like my flies to have that movement. Yeah, I have a couple other ones I better not tell, but I have a certain way I like to rig for sure.
And I
the only clue I'll give you about it is I like to use tippet rings or micro swivels. I use micro swivels sometimes.
And do your carp come out 5-pound full grown like ours? Live? Live birth.
No,
ours come out live birth, right?
I've never seen any small ones.
That's
sure.
What I mean. They're yeah, 5-pound live birth,
the
right?
The whole world's never seen a small carp.
Okay, like now you guys like in the tournament style, like, how are you weighing them out? Is it by weight inches? I mean, it's
they do it by length, unfortunately, because I think carp really lends itself to weight. You know, you can have a 27-inch fish weigh almost 20 pounds. You know, a 27-inch fish weigh 10 to 12 pounds. I wish they do it by weight, but they do it by length right now. Oftentimes it's proportional, but not always. It's length to weight, you know. So that would be one thing. So we basically just carry tape measures and then take pictures of the mouth of the fish with the fly. So you can see that's fairly caught. And, yeah, everyone's got a judge. It's a terrific event, and I don't think it's full this year, so I know they're looking for entrants.
And when you take pictures of the fly in the fish's mouth, do you tell the judges not to show a goddamn soul?
Yeah, I do. They only show the organizers.
Show your dirty mouth.
And that's it.
You see that?
He didn't see that. He has everybody's trade secrets then.
One thing that's funny is, like, anyone that I've either taken out on the guide trip or fished with in a slam knows the secrets. And so I'm getting a little nervous that the lid's going to be off here.
Use them against you one day.
But I'm basically making slime non-disclosure agreements and take blood oaths and all kinds of, you know, swear. Yeah,
you blindfold them and then fly. Just let them cast.
Just swear on children's blood, yeah. I like to be secret. I mean, you know, it is an edge, and it's like, I don't know. I'm secretive, and I don't do it to be a jerk. I promise everyone listening. I don't do it that way. I like to things that I figured out. I kind of like to keep for now.
No, you do it because you're making your living off of it.
Yes, that's really it's true. And but, like same thing like why I don't have a bunch of flies published is I'm really secretive and selective about flies that I get that destroy fish, and I don't want that. I'd rather not make 8 to 10 cents a fly on it selling it. I'd rather just make it do it with guide trips, you know, and make that money that way.
That was kind of a question I was going to ask. Now with tying, I'm sure you're tying anything for all your clients, right? Most of the flies you're fishing.
Everything I fish, I almost tie everything that I fish.
Now what about the tournament fishing? Are them flies coming from somebody else, or you're tying them also?
Oh, I tie those too.
You.
So yeah, I remember the year that the really good fly that I have. About 4.5 years ago, maybe this would be the 5th year again, maybe it'd be 5 years old here soon, but I was fishing with Trevor Tanner, who you might hear, he's a fly carping blog, and he and I were fishing this park lake, and it was zooming with people around it. There were people running around, there was a 5K or some kind of walk for charity, I don't know, people everywhere, and I had this fly, and I brought it there and said, hey, Trev, check this out, you know, I want to try it today, and threw it in at the first group of maybe 3 fish we saw, and two of them just dive bombed like they were racing for the fly, and I caught one right away. And next thing I know, I had like 100 people watching from this 5K, and I'm like, "Holy crap! Did you see that?" And he's like, "Yeah, that was nuts." So I went on to keep testing it, and then we eventually tried it in the river. Same thing. So it's just been a good pattern.
Are these? Go ahead.
Hmm? But I've also done well on things like leeches, things that are worm based. Not to say that my fly is the only fly that'll work. Certainly not.
I was going to say, are those flies like representing something very specific to your area? Or, I mean, I know that's kind of prying a little much.
No, because I've had it work in Lake Michigan. So I think it's just a good little pattern for carp. I think they just see it something as foody and they want to eat it. That's what I think. You know, because it's not so specific, it doesn't look like a goby or a crayfish or a leech. I mean, it's just something they're like, I don't know, but it's wiggling and it looks like food and I'm going to go eat it. That's kind of how, as far as I think they think with it.
So can we get a little bit techy about the carp slam?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. What's some numbers it takes to win it 4 years in a row? Like how many total inches do you need to be competitive?
I don't know it in those numbers. I usually just think about it in numbers of fish.
Oh, okay.
Three to four fish have been winning it in a lot of years between a team, and that's, you know, with the two anglers taking turns for the first 2 hours, fishing together for the third hour, and doing that twice. So the average amateur angler catches 0.5 carp, so there's usually one between every two amateurs that enter the tournament, and the average pro catches probably one. And that's, remember, these are averages. So there's a lot of teams that come with zeros, and there's some teams that come with multiples, you know. So there's all those stats. A lot of those stats are online. You can kind of see how people have done.
And what justifies someone as a pro carp fisherman?
The initial thing, they were pulling guys that were just trout fishing kind of guys or people that made a living from fishing that also knew how to catch carp. That was the original kind of the model for it. You know, we needed to find 16 people that could catch carp. And that's how it started here, with those original pros. Now I know there's people that are really, including myself, I think I'm like kind of a specialist at it, and, you know, more than just a trout guy. I'm definitely both.
Basically,
their initial thing was just that they had to find people that made a living or made some portion of their living from fishing as a pro. That was how it was first decided.
So you ever get these people calling you back to maybe book a trip or learn more about any carp fishing, anybody you ever fished with in any tournaments?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And a lot of times, either after, or before, sometimes I've had people, almost every amateur that I've that's been in the carp slam that's ever been out with me has caught a fish in the slam. So I've watched those stats, and anyone that I've had out has caught a fish in the slam, which is great because you're catching under tough circumstances. Could be pressure. You know, you only get so much water to fish. You can just keep moving to a new spot. So you get like a mile and a half to fish. But I'm proud of that. You know, that means I like to teach. I like to break things down into very digestible little pellets of learning and see it work. I love seeing it work.
So what's your favorite rod to use for cart?
So that's a great question. Not so much of a model. I'm using a Sage XL 9.5 foot 7 weight.
7 weight.
And I used to use a 6, but I switched to a 7 because I wanted more control over the fish as the fish gets closer to the net. I wasn't having enough control with 6. I like the 9.5. I'm real fussy about that. I've tried 10 and I've tried 9s. And I can, you'd think I can't feel the difference, but I can immediately, I don't know why, I can tell. I want it right at 9.5. So I can do a combination of short line work where I'm almost moving the fly like a puppeteer from above with short range stuff, and then I can still have enough to do an overhead cast without it being too long. I can have an accurate overhead cast. But a lot of stuff I do, again, is short range, so having that little bit extra length means I can do things like dapping on fish or what I call a pendulum cast, which I need to make a video about that, because it's kind of one of my casts that I've never really seen it. Never seen anyone else describe it, what I'm doing with the cast. It's underhanded, and it's interesting how it works.
Yeah, make a video. I'm intrigued.
I haven't made that video yet. The pendulum, I can talk. Let's just talk about it. Pendulum cast, I like to fish with a rod's length to the fly. And exactly. And then if I have extra length out, I'll have that held in loops of line under that rod hand. So if I, you know, in case I'm going to go to overhand cast and because the fish move, but if it's close, I always want my anglers to have exactly one rod's length of line to their fly. And I want their fly held in their non-dominant hand. And then if they have to, they can simply release the fly. It's hard to describe in just words, but they're basically releasing the fly, dipping the rod tip down, and making a sort of loose U-shape with the rod tip outward. They're pushing outward and making that a little U-shape. And you can get the fly to go almost two rod lengths away from your hand. And then, so think about it. You're working like 15 to almost 20 feet without having to splash the water hard with an overhand cast. And then if they want, they can manipulate the fly by doing a drag and drop, keeping it high in the water column, and then gently letting it settle to the bottom.
So it's like flipping a jig with a bait caster.
Yeah, it's a lot like flipping. It's like flipping. But again, with the control and without ever having it freely on its own. And like a lot of people, I think, do this where they let that thing free fall to the fish. You don't want to let that thing free fall most of the time unless you have really light flies. Most of the time it comes bombarding at them too quickly, and it scares fish. And people, they think it's the pattern, but it's not the pattern. It's the way the pattern behaved that scared the fish. It's sinking too fast. So I always implore my either clients or competitors to let that thing settle more slowly and like sort of keep it in control as it's descending rather than free fall. So there's a weird little techie tip for you.
So like you said, the drag and drop.
Yeah, so yeah. If I was talking to like my friend Jeremy Elms, he's one of my guys as well. He even know if I said, hey, yeah, no, it's a simple pendulum, drag and drop, you know, dropped it on it, and bam, fish moved over and hoovered it up. That would be like the slang of talking about some, you know, recent carp thing. But we carp a lot. But the pendulum, you know, like I said, let's say the fly ends up 15 to 20 feet away. Drag and drop means I'm just keeping the fly up high in the water column or skimming the surface ideally. I like to let it skim the surface, and then as I let it lower, I just slowly lower my rod tip to sort of slow that fly's descent into the fish's sort of zone. And the zone for a carp, I like to think about it like a Dixie plate. If you had a paper plate, that's about the zone I kind of want most of my flies to be in. Sometimes they'll move farther, of course. And the Dixie plate doesn't start at the eyes or ahead of the eyes. It actually goes back to like the gills, because the fish can see more radially around. Like, it's not just in front of them. In fact, they don't see that well directly in front of their snout anyway. So flies off to the side often produce a really good reactionary strike. But the Dixie paper plate, like, you know, let's say, what's that, 12 inches? And it goes, and then, like, if that fish's head was laying on it, it would just go back to their gills. That's the zone I'd be talking about for fish, for the carp.
And you said you fish with a 9.5 foot rod?
Yep.
Okay. I have a 9.5 foot rod, and when I first got it, I was throwing tailing loops like crazy. Do you find that? Okay. Do you find the client? I've since conquered that sometimes.
Okay.
But do you find that your clients that are used to 9-footers have an issue, like with the extra 6 inches?
No, because I'm never gonna let them cast that far anyway.
Okay.
Honestly, yeah. So, no, I don't think so. I think you know, if you're roll casting, I do a lot of roll casting, so I'm a really big fan of mid-weight rods. You don't need your $900 laser fast action rod. In fact, I don't like it because I want a roll cast, and a roll cast needs a relatively light load to move a lot of line. It's kind of the mid-weight or mid-flex rods, mid-action rods seem to find that mid-fast. So that's why I use that Sage Excel, which is so cool because that means those price points on those for, you know, non-pros is like $400 bucks, you know, $400 or $500 bucks. You can get it. And you can catch a carp. You know, I used to catch carp with a $50 rod I picked up at a bargain bin. So you can do it with that too. It was like a five weight that fished more like a 7. It was this weird stiff as a board thing, but it worked.
My main carp rod's a Cabela's TSL, I think. And it's okay. Super duper slow, but
yeah, man,
it's super fun.
Yeah, exactly. And the roll cast is so cool. Like, and really, you're working on these almost like mini spay casts too. I do sometimes to change directions and in a moving water situation when you have a slight current going by you. Sometimes you just need to change directions. And the roll cast, rather than having to pick it up, aerialize the whole cast, and change directions in the air, I can just do like a little mini spay type thing and roll it in a different direction, and then just go right back to my drag and drop. Let the fly settle down where I want it. Hook the fish. Repeat.
rinse, repeat.
I love the confidence.
I love it, man. It's but no, the roll cast is really, that's, if I'm not doing the pendulum type stuff in the real close range, sometimes I'll do a quick, short overhead cast. If it's windy, let's say, I'll do a really short one. I'm talking 10 feet of line out, including any little bit of, mostly leader out, maybe a little extra, and then I do a drag and drop. But otherwise, I do a lot more roll casting. We don't have a lot of back cast room around the plat, so a lot of times you have obstructions behind you.
And you really do think that the camo allows you to get closer to the fish than wearing normal clothes?
I have no doubt.
And do you think that's because you're fishing pressured fish, or do you think that would be the same if you went to Arkansas?
Same anywhere.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you have no choice. Like, I was just fishing in Michigan. There's not a really great way to camo yourself, but they sure as heck can see you. When I'm standing up on a boat trying to see them, they can certainly see me, too. And same thing, just like the guys who are on the flats. The better guides are going to have you all in your soft blues and your, you know, cloud grays and all that, you know, stuff like that. And it definitely matters. And if you have habitat where you can ambush the fish and you can hide in the habitat, might as well blend right in with it. And man, it's amazing how relaxed those fish can be. A lot of times fish will stay near you. They won't buzz off. They won't be scared, but they know you're there. It's almost like I watch them keeping an eyeball on you. And it's really bizarre to me. Like, I'm like, that fish has made me. He knows I'm here. He's not, we call it hard spooking or soft spooking. The fish sees you and bolts real fast. We call that the hard spook. But sometimes they just sort of say, something's not right. That looks like a person. I'm just going to slowly slide over here into the shadowy depths, you know, like they just kind of glide away. And I think it's because they're seeing you. No doubt.
A little different than harder, soft porn, right?
Yeah, exactly. If I could be invisible and do this, seriously, like if I could have a little potion of invisibility and do this, I would do it. I would love to have that. I could get right on top of the fish.
They're also really sensitive.
That would definitely be my superpower.
Hey, we got a place a blind guy could catch one here. You could be blind.
What?
You could be blind and catch carp here. They will let.
Is that right? How come?
Because there's a spot that where they all feed. People come and bring them loaves of bread. These fish are bulked up.
Oh.
You would see this in your dreams, no doubt about it. If you got one,
they're
at
like
it.
30 pounds.
They're fat from carbohydrates.
I see. Yeah. You could throw anything in there, and they're gonna at least try it out with their mouth. Like
a small child would die.
Well, if you throw what is it, a bread fly? They come and sip it like a dry fly. They do. They just come sip it off the top like it's a dry fly. It's something fun at the end of the floats we usually do.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, again, like I did, I've actually got into bait fishing for carp, like the European style bait fishing and the UK stuff. I'm getting into that, you know, with
you aging stuff rod, in your basement,
you know,
fruits.
Method, yeah. Vital arms, method feeders, fishing at night. I'm doing all kinds of stuff, experimenting with the fish. So I'm not just a fly purist with them anymore. But
have you learned anything?
Against me.
Have you learned anything?
Yeah, I learned
doing
a lot.
It?
Yeah, you know, you learn about the locations when you can't see them. Like, where are they right now when I can't see them? Where are they? What are they doing? You know, that's one interesting thing. The other thing about it is, like, how active they are at night. And I've heard really good stories of people using, like, headlamps. I mean, we've caught them at night here under the city lights. But you can use, like, headlamps, and the fish don't get really bothered by lights, much like frogs or anything. You can catch fish with a headlamp on the water. So they feed like crazy through the night.
That's like the guys around here do that for bow fishing. They'll giant spotlights and just go up and down, like troll motor up and down the lake banks.
Okay.
And just whack them.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. Because the fish just lay there. They don't care about the light. And yeah, they're just sitting ducks. But you can do the same thing with a fly. You know, if you can catch them. If you can find them at night, you can catch them at night.
So if you're sitting there hitting them with a spotlight on your head, you watch them eat and everything just like that?
Yeah. It's the same. I mean, I don't do a lot with headlamps. Mostly I've been using city lamps. But no, like, you can see them eat. They're tailing. They're doing the whole thing in the middle of the night. In fact, a lot of fish feed more at night, you know, or at least on the edges of the day, especially in the summer when you get the right kind of temperature. And they feel safe, too. They'll come really shallow when it's dark, too. And I can tell when I see some of the sandy, flat areas on the Platte, like that, I would never see a fish in the day, ever. But man, you could see the feed marks there. You'll see these like pock marks, where you know somebody's been chowing, or a whole bunch of them's been chowing in like 6 inches of water. You know, where their backs are probably almost out.
So, Chris, we've had you on the line for just about an hour. Is there anything anything we haven't hit on that you want to hit on?
Not really. You know, like, again, I guess for me, I love to teach. You know, like as I said in the beginning, I'm sitting here in wet boots, and I've been out with two ladies this morning. And still have this continuous enthusiasm for the sport. Never gets old to me, and learning new things and constantly pushing. So, yeah, if anyone hasn't tried the carp thing and you're looking for a new part of your game to add to, or new something to add to your game, carp is definitely a way to go. That's about all I really have.
Where can someone go to book a half day or a full day with you?
So I have a website, galvinguiding.com. It's GALVIN, galvinguiding.com. I do heavy postings on social media at galvinguiding. So you can kind of follow me there. And that's usually the catches and the events that are shown on there are things that have happened within the last few days. But yeah, those are the two best places. And all the instructions on how to contact me will be on there as well.
And on Galvin Guiding, you also have the write-ups for the Carp Slam, correct?
Yeah, a lot of blog posts about that. And they're pretty detailed. You know, I geek out about it pretty hard. So they're very detailed about each shot and, you know, what I was faced with. And there's tons of pictures. And last year, I had a dream team. I had this guy named Mike Medina. We ended up with 7 fish, and we had a double. 7 fish as a team. I got 4. He got 3, and we just did really well. We had our judge he's Urban Anglers. I think it's Urban Anglers USA. Anyways, his name's, I believe, Patrick, and he was there photographing the whole time. So I got a whole bunch of great photos from that one too. So if anyone wants to see what the Platte looks like and kind of see what our habitat that we deal with is, all those pictures at the end of the blog would kind of give you a really good feel for it. From the city stuff where you're around a lot of, you know, man-made structures and seeing like homeless camps and graffiti on bridges, and then to the kind of downriver stuff, which is way more just remote. Looks like you go duck hunting there. You know, there's no buildings, no man-made stuff really, and totally different environment.
Tutorials on all the most effective flies too, right, on there?
Oh, no.
Just kidding.
Yeah, and the rest of my secret flies on there, too. No,
all right.
How-to leader setup.
The group is growing, the people that know. So if you come out with me on a trip, you're 100% going to see that fly at some point and learn a heck of a lot of tactics about how to do it. And the tactics work everywhere. In fact, I'm going to try to make it out to Chicago this year and compete in their event. the name escapes me right now. I know there's a bunch of them popping up, but this one's been going on for a few years, and it's in the Chicago greater area, and I want to try it. Yeah, because, you know, the fish are similar, just like trout. Fish are similar, and even though I'm in a different state, I'm still in a similar environment. The fish is in a cold water, moving environment, usually, so.
Yeah, take the show on the road.
Yeah, just take the show on the road. Golfers go to different courses around the world. They play good golf, and why can't I go and do carp somewhere else, you know?
I bet you, if anybody can, will you take it, you can.
I have no idea how I come across. If I come across a little intense, I apologize, but.
No.
You wait till you guys have John. Have you had John Montana yet?
Next week, brother. I cannot wait.
He will challenge me for intensity. People think I'm like laid back, and John is definitely super intense. He's funny too, really good guy. I think he's really like behind that mask, man. That's an intense dude. He takes it super seriously, loves it. Very techie. He's figured out tons and tons of things. That's great.
Yeah, man. I found the guys that they take carp seriously, behind all the joking and BSing, they're pretty good guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone I've met through it, it's been wonderful, you know, like, and the foundations, again, that and trout, but the friendships that I made, like, let's say I was getting married, I couldn't believe how many fishermen I'd have invited to my wedding, you know, like, so I've made all these lifelong friends through it, and, a lot of great people behind the carp game for sure. But yeah, if you guys ever can get in touch with Trevor Tanner, he'd be a good one for you. And you already had DC Frazier, Dan, and John Montana's coming up. Barry, be fun for you, Barry Reynolds.
Yeah, man, you're gonna have to text me all these. We're self lubricating right now, drinking a couple of cocktails.
Oh, nice.
So
that's awesome.
So names are gonna escape our memories, but yeah,
no problem.
That's gonna be good. And thank you for the suggestions.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Fishing yesterday, right?
I did fish yesterday. And it was one of them days that Chase was talking about earlier, looking for the movement and slashes. Figured I'd start early with it being hot out. Second cast, lazy follow. And finally, musky fishing, by the way. Finally, we haven't been talking about it much or doing much.
Yep, we haven't.
I've been itching bad. I was like, all right, screw it. I need to find open water. Second cast, like a lazy follow in from like probably low 30s fish. And shortly after that, guy down from me, gear fishing, hooked one. So,
what a bulldog!
You know what? He was dang it. What's the name? No, what's the name of them, like European one? With like the head that's got like a separate head on it,
like a headbanger.
Headbanger, yep. You're still in a headbanger. There you go.
Oh, them are pretty cool.
And he hooked one right up close to him.
Right in the mouth.
Came unglued. Good fish from what he said. I mean, he had seen it earlier.
I tried to get one of those lures from them fellers. I was like, hey, they like on Instagram.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, they work.
Hey, send me one of them. I'll rip that bitch. I'll throw that.
They didn't
send me one.
But I moved down, got on some timber, and a lot of activity. It just started to rain for about 15 minutes. A couple fish started moving, so couple blow up inside the tree, and then another fish came swimming out. And just shortly after, I look up and I see the flash, and I feel a tug on the fly real quick. Nothing there. Strip again. The fish did like immediate U-turn. Comes back, swipes at it again. Nothing. Gone. And then actually moved another one out of that just shortly after that. But a lot of activity real quick early, and then sun came out and pretty much just locked everything down. But fun for a little while it lasted, but still never put the hook in one. And then went and do a little bit of pike fishing.
What, any certain colors that were moving fish? Or
I was white and orange minnow.
What size? Anything?
9-inch. Six-aught. Yeah, standard single. All three fish I moved came on that.
Standard
fly.
Basic bitch fly.
Yep.
Yeah.
9-inch.
after that, went into a little pike fishing. Still haven't found any pike in there, and just running into a bunch of big pickerel. But I'd been in there, Monday I went. It was low and clear. Went back again, and we're just getting them stupid isolated storms. And it hit right through that little section. and it was high and muddy this time. But when I went in Monday, there's idiot down at the lower part of it. So we had to just fish the upper part. So you're kind of like
back. So did you walk right through the river?
At that point, I had already gone through like the five-minute process of dredging my way through all the cabbage to get to like where I can see him and get him. You gotta be kidding me. I got probably 50 mosquito bites just stuck in that little swampy spot and stuck in the trees pushing through. So I see them. They had walked in from like, there's only like one other spot to get in. So I look at my buddy. I'm like, you just want to walk through? And he's like, yeah. So we start and we're like, ugh. And we're kind of like both are like, forget it. Let's just go up to the top. So we back out, went up to the top spot. And you're almost like standing with your back against just more like an overhang. And you have maybe like a 15-foot section behind you. So you got your back up against it, your back casting, like picking the hole in it and kind of just throwing into like a 15, 8, 20-foot wide spot. And at this point, it's real low and clear. So I got my back up against it, and I'm kind of like roll casting back over like overhangs towards the bank. I'm going to use a number two clouser. And a fish came right out and just smoked it. And can't do none of that crap now. Just blown up and crap.
So
that area I couldn't even get back into. So I got to fish a lower section yesterday, but it was too high, and there's just no way I was going to get up into it.
When it's low and clear like that, have you tried throwing poppers?
A little. Nothing real small.
Like the stuff we were throwing today, probably.
No, not that small. Like number one divers and twos and a little bit bigger stuff. But
those double barrel poppers we were throwing today might be the moneymaker.
I'm wondering.
Something different, you know?
Yep, that'd be worth a shot. Yeah, because it's low and clear like that. I mean, it's usually just small. I mean, I've went in there and had days to throw it. It was low and clear, that 9-inch delivery, man.
Mm-hmm. They make a lot of...
That got a big pike. So it's just what I don't know. On yeah, it's so weird because every time you go in, it's just... It's completely different than the time you were in before. And the bad part is it's just still less and less pike. And bigger pickerel.
But those poppers, they make a big splash for a light little fly.
Yeah, little things do good.
Yeah, for a light fly, you can cast them a mile and not, you know, doesn't feel like anything on there. Make a nice little pop.
That black popper you got from the fly shop that caught all the bass today, it's starting to spin on the hook.
Mm-hmm.
We put through some abuse today.
Which one did I hang in that tree? Oh, that white one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I stuck another one way up a tree.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to get in this one. There was no getting it.
Broke it off?
That was the one that I said, hey, guys, watch your back cast. And the next cast it was up there.
Yeah, but yesterday, though, with it being, like, muddy through that area, I just threw, like, a little bulkhead, probably like a 5-inch, just kind of let it hang. And surprisingly enough, he found it and was hanging. Couple strips, pause, and it worked. And I mean, it was muddy.
And you got one yesterday.
One.
And one on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Your favorite.
Did Michael get any?
No.
Has he not. Has he gotten one yet?
This year?
Yeah, this year.
Oh, boy, I don't think he has.
He's got to quit going with you, man. You're hogging them all.
Yeah, I don't think he went by. Yeah, he got one by himself when he went. That's a day because he dunked his phone. Trying to take a picture of it. Actually, he didn't dunk his phone. He didn't realize that when he bent over, water had got in, and he doesn't have like a waterproof inside pocket on his waders. It's a mesh one. So he just opened the zipper, dropped the phone, and the whole thing was filled up with water.
Oh, dope.
And this will happen.
So I went.
You did a little fishing.
I went on the 4th of July with my son and MBJW, my buddy John Whalen. And he got these new electronics, which are, it's weird. I don't know if I like them. You can see the fish. They're live view of the fish. You can see your jig, and you can see the fish rushing over to it and eating or not. I saw him miss hook sets 3 times because he was watching the graph, mm-hmm. and the fish was rushing over, and he set the hook, and there was nothing there.
It's like live scan, what's it called?
It's panoptics.
Oh, he got
Who
that?
Who makes this?
That's the one I was fucking touting about. It's the real deal. If you want to see what's going on down there.
It is, but I didn't like it because if I was watching it, I wasn't as confident if I didn't see my thing, lore. So I quit watching it, and I was throwing a Roadrunner. It's a little jig head with a spinny blade on the back of it and a twister tail. And I caught as many fish doing that, just slow rolling them, as he was vertical jigging, watching the fish
eat
the tube on the lure.
Can you use it through the ice?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You have to bring a battery with you, but yeah, you can use it on the ice.
Okay.
Saying that gives you, pretty much real time information right there. That I watched the Aaron Weeb on Uncut Angling. They're fishing for muskies, and you get over the bait. Then boom, it shows you a picture of a muskie. It looks like the outline of a muskie in there.
It's
giving you the exact picture of what's down there in a big cone. And there's views to the side, different options for ice fishing and stuff, but it's nuts on the information it gives you.
And he has it hooked up to his trolling motor, and his trolling motor has an arrow on it. So whichever way the arrow is pointed, that live view is pointing straight out from that arrow. So you can see that the fish are 50 feet out from that arrow, 10 feet down. So you make as far of a cast as you can and let your lure swing in front of them, just jig, 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 and you can catch them like that. We found a school of white bass. We're like, man, these fish are just running from us. Like, we'd pull up to them, and they were running. And then we looked, like, he was scanning around, and he saw they were chasing bait. So I was telling Mark earlier, we chased this school of white bass the whole way around, like, an inlet. And they were just chasing bait, and you could see them on this pan optics. They were streaking, chasing bait, and just crushing it right under the surface. I ended up hooking one of them, and it was a bigger fish. It was taking drag, but it popped off before I could see it. But it's cool, and that's the kind of stuff that we need to know when we go fly fishing for these fish, because we're fishing, and those fish are in and out. They're always moving. They're chasing the bait, and they're going to be zooming past you, So we can fish and fish and keep your fly in the water as much as possible. And then when a school intersects with it, that's when you have your option. But you don't – it's hard to chase them.
You don't know. You could pack up and be like, oh, we're out of here, and here comes a blitz of fish through there. I see what you're saying. The time you're spending on one spot – versus knowing that they're over here now, they're over there now. You're kind of casting in dead water until that moment.
Yeah, until that moment. But that's 90% of fishing, man. You cast until they come. So it's just something that I learned that day, and it was fun.
Better yet, did your son have a good time out there? Did he get to reel any of the fishing?
No, he didn't give a shit about the fish. But he had a blast on the boat. We got to go fast. It's the first time he's ever in a boat that made a wake.
No, that's cool.
Teach him how to run the pan optics.
What kind of boat were you guys running? What does he got?
16 foot low with a 20 horse.
Oh, sweet.
So and that's around an $1,800 pan optics on there.
Two screens. One pan optic transducer, one other transducer. He got like down view and side view in the back.
It's nuts, dude.
And a 24 volt trolling motor.
They say it's the end of it. This is the last fish finder. You know what I mean? For a few years, they were talking about having live shit like that, but it's here. Now, you got to be real serious about
that. This is the hoverboard of fishing?
It's here. It's here, and it's weird. Like I said, it lowered my confidence more than boosted my confidence.
Well, what would you think in an ice fishing scenario, though?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, okay, now instead of all of us having a screen... you're sitting on a bucket watching it, and I'm 30 feet away, and you'd be like, oh, Jace, they're coming right for your ship, man, get ready. Like, that's pretty cool. Like, hey,
in
buddy,
our standpoint,
you guys ready?
Though, that's huge, too.
Well, yeah.
If you're going out on the lake, the musky fish, and you can know that there's a musky right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my buddy said, I can take you around and show you musky with this. And I was like, that's cool. That would really be cool, but I don't know. Like I said, if I see a fish and see that it's not responding well to a fly, I think my confidence is going to go down. But that's just me.
Yeah, but not only that is, okay, now you're probably only fishing to like not even a third of the muskies because of depth and how you're doing it. Fly fishing for the most part, you're not getting that 5 feet, or you're maybe not fishing deep enough in certain areas. You know what I mean? Them fish are always, they're there. To know it is, that should build your confidence because, all right, let's come back next time with a different plan.
I know it should build confidence, but
at least you can know and have an idea because, I mean, I guess those fish don't move quite as much as like what we were talking about, like the white bass or the stripers or anything like that. That's that's a little bit of home, at least for a little while.
Yeah.
You could come back the next day or what's, 2 days later, and that fish is probably still there.
Where do they run?
1,500.
That's what I heard prices on them. But then I think the transducer's 1,200. You got, there's all kind of, it's a pretty penny.
Yeah.
But it's a real deal. Like I said, I watched this. They were musky fishing. This was like him unboxing it right out the box, showing you what it could do. So they're using like a umbrella rig style. You know, five different whatever, however many hooks you could have is. Probably Quebec, you know, a good fishing area. But these bait fish were down there heavy, and then all of a sudden, oh, there's a fish. There's a fish. Pull their line up. Bam. You see the fish bite right on it. Like, no mistaking that they were muskies. Every time they seen a muskie, there's a muskie. So, just to have that information. Because look at a fish finder 15 years ago. You see a little fish on it. You're like, oh, there's a medium-sized. medium-sized, what are them crackers called?
A goldfish.
There's a fucking medium-sized goldfish on the screen. Like, yeah.
I will say this. John went out on Monday. I went out with him on Wednesday. He went out on Monday by himself. And he said he kept seeing these big things on the bottom. Like, he couldn't really figure out what they were.
Turtles?
30-pound flathead. It ate his one-inch crappie jig.
Holy crap.
He said he fought it for 35 minutes. He had to the side of the boat, and it wouldn't fit in his net. I have a blurry-ass iPhone picture of it, but it just looks like a big gold blob. But he called me. He's like, dude, I'm hooked up to this fish. I've been on it for 20 minutes.
I'll call you back.
I was going up to camp to mow grass, and I lost him halfway through. But, yeah, he said he had up to the boat, and it wouldn't fit in his net. So, but we ended up throwing my son in the lake. He liked that until he got cold. I was like, how in the hell are you cold? He has his mother's blood in him. He's always cold.
That, and did you tell him there, you know, giant muskie in there? That'll always get a kid out of the water quick, too.
No. When he was in the air, because John was like, hey, let me fix your life jacket. And Nolan walked over, and he zipped his life jacket up and just picked him up and threw him in the water. His eyes were as big as pie pumpkins.
Have you ready for life, though?
Oh, man.
Oh, man. It's going to happen.
Shit.
So,
that's pretty funny.
It was pretty good. We end up catching 20 crappie or so. And I think the way I was catching them, I was throwing the Roadrunner and just slow rolling it right under the surface. I could do that better and more effective with a fly rod and a 3-inch game changer. I think.
I don't think a crappie would be so keyed in on your 3-inch game changer, though.
Well, the Roadrunner I was throwing was 2 inches.
Yeah. It's weird, man. They're weird fish, but...
A little feather game changer? Oh, I think they'd be totally into it.
That's what's catching them all in the pond over...
But that steady, that steadiness of being able to reel it with a spinning reel versus that little bit of... You know what I mean? Any pause and retreat.
Because even during the pause, there's still movement during the pause. It's still going.
Yeah, crappie are particular, dude. They like to come up on behind it, eat it, still move with it, so nobody feels them. And just in case it's a fisherman whose jig they just ate, dude, they're weird, man. They're weird. Light. They're finicky.
And when I tell you slow rolling, I'd cast out as far as I could.
And just creep the reel.
I would just put my pointer finger on the reel and roll it as slow as I could.
And then it just felt like a little bit of weight on there.
Extra. No, they were blasting it.
They were blasting. That's even better.
As blasting it as crappie do on spinning rods. I will say that's the first time I've went out without a fly rod in a boat in probably 4 years, 5 years maybe.
Oh, when you threw your elbow out, you were out there a couple times spinning gear.
I still had a fly rod on the boat.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, this was no fly rods at all, huh?
No fly rods allowed. Mm. It's the He-Man Woman Haters Club.
Mm. Yeah, you can't save yourself with a spinning rod, right?
Nah.
If I'm not gonna catch any like I did today, what better way than to go out trying?
So, hey, do we have anything else we want to hit on?
No, I think we covered it all.
I had a couple.
The weekend review.
I had a couple of them, the barn swallows or whatever, in my backfield as I was cutting the grass for like, I think it was the first time ever. I don't remember them ever doing that before, man. They're right on the lawnmower, dude. Just crushing stuff.
That's like chumming for carp.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
You're feeding them?
Yeah, one was there. I swear it left for 2 seconds, and then two of them come back. One, he went and got his friend. He was like, dude, it's over. All the food's
happening
over here, bro. Yeah.
Right now.
Buffet.
Time to do
it. It was pretty cool.
Did you happen to see any big moths or butterflies or something crushed?
All kind. No, I didn't get to see any get crushed, but I saw a lot of them just floating up. I know all the food was there.
That's the best. Like when I used to cut my mom's grass right across the street from here, I'd kick up a big moth or something, and then barn swallow would just come and just T-bone. It's just like a musky would a fly. It's so cool.
They do, man. It was feeding time. I was like, wow, that is awesome. That was a pretty cool thing to happen last week. But we had mentioned it. We talked about it like 2 days before that, and then it happened at my house. I was like, oh, that was fun.
It's fun.
They're all like, choop, 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 choop. I'm like, oh, whoa.
My mom hates birds, so she hates when the swallows do that.
You get them big time over there. I only had a couple, but
yeah,
there's a couple barns.
There's a barn.
Yeah, there's a couple barns around there, so that was fun. Fun to watch.
So, I got nothing else.
Yeah, me neither. No.
All right, man. This
meeting is adjourned.
Hey, happy 4th of July, everybody. We had just had that. I guess we should have said it on the last show, but, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I had a good one.
We did. We had a hell of a celebration.
Mm-hmm.
So. Alrighty. Hey, tonight's show brought to us by Predator Fly Gear. Check them out, predatorflygear.com.
Yep. Go tie some feathers on some Arex hooks. Check them out, arexhooks.com.
Get your flies at Urban Fly Co. Check out Mark, urbanflyco.com. He caught a nice largemouth on a hollow fly. His hollow fly, man, on point. Thing was moving great, so check them out as well. They're on there.
UrbanFlyCompany.com.
Company.com, I'm sorry.
Sims Fishing at SimsFishing.com.
Why not fishing? Check out the app, The Dock.
Yep, and come get some all-sorts genetics. Stuff's gorgeous.
When I step up in the place, say yo, I step correct. Woo-ha!
Yeah, you all in check, y'all.
I got that head nod, shit that make you break your neck. Woo-ha! I got you all in check. And you know we come through to wreck the discotheque. Woo-ha! I got you all in check. Throw your hands up in the air, don't ever disrespect. Woo-ha! I got you all in check. Bust the rhymes up in the place, the true indeed. Yes, I got the record, that's word on my feet. I'm guaranteed to
whatever
give
happened
you
to good old rap like this, man? She ain't around no more.
Wake up every morning, your wife must succeed. Nationwide talkers make their world stampede. Yo, Willie, make we roll some weed. Mad charge, nigga, now I must proceed. Yo, we about to make moves at speed.